This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, September 8th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll get an update on Colorado's redistricting process. Then we'll hear what's in store for Boulder Symphony goers when the season opens this week. And our regular Wednesday feature, naturally, with herbalist Brigitte Mars. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then it's a public affair. In the first half of the program, Elena Claver brings us an interview on birding by ear. Then Liz Lane speaks with author and former rich kid tutor Blythe Grossberg about her new book, I Left My Homework in the Hamptons. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative comes your way to bring you a mix of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
New cases of COVID-19 infections are at the highest level they've been in Colorado since early January. Data from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment also show that hospitalizations are getting close to the peak they reached in the spring months of 2020. As of yesterday, more than 950 people were hospitalized in the state with confirmed or suspected cases. The Denver Post reports that deaths from COVID-19 are also rising. 71 people died during the week ending August 29th, about twice more than those in the first week of the month. Beth Carlton, a professor at the Colorado Public School of Public Health, said that the risk of exposure to the virus is high for everyone now, but the difference is that vaccinated people are less likely to get infected, and if they are, their risk of severe illness is substantially lower. She added that the best way to protect people against the more dangerous variants is to get vaccinated. In other COVID-19 news, the State Department of Health has announced it is providing all K-12 schools with free testing for the school year. The screening is voluntary and is a rapid antigen test for all students and staff at public and private schools. The department said the tests would be available this week. In Jefferson County, the head of the public health agency has taken its three COVID-19 vaccination vans off the road after nurses and medical staff were harassed by passersby. The director of the county health department told the Denver Post that the staff of a mobile vaccine clinic in Gilpin County were yelled at and threatened by motorists. Jefferson County provides service there on a contract. One driver ran over and destroyed temporary signs at the clinic that had been put up around its vaccine tent. A nurse at another mobile site in Jefferson County had an unknown liquid thrown at her. Officials in Denver said yesterday they are shutting off Civic Center Park to public access beginning on September 15th. Authorities say the closure is necessary because of health, safety, and environmental problems. It's not clear yet when the park will reopen. It extends from the city and county building to the state capitol. The deputy director of Parks and Recreation told CBS4 that it could be closed for at least 2 months, citing violent incidents in the area, in addition to unsanitary conditions where unhoused people are living. The city of Boulder may extend its permitting of some downtown businesses to expand outdoor dining into streets. At its meeting on Thursday, the council will review whether to extend an emergency order until April 1st. The Daily Camera reports that portions of Pearl Street, 10th Street, and Pennsylvania Avenue are currently closed for businesses to expand their spaces. The former city manager, Jane Brodigam, issued the original order in May of 2020. Various council members have already said they're in favor of the extension, and the city is exploring a pilot program for outdoor dining that could be continued after the pandemic is over. Yesterday, the judge presiding over the trial of the alleged shooter at the King Soopers on Table Mesa Drive ordered him to undergo an evaluation to determine if he's competent to proceed. The Daily Camera reports that Boulder County District Attorney Michael Doherty asked the judge that the evaluation be done at the county jail because of long waits and a backlog at the state mental health facility in Pueblo. Judge Ingrid Bakke agreed, saying that the case needs to move on, and adding that she hoped doing the evaluation locally would be faster. The defendant, Ahmad Al-Aliwi Alisa, has been charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder and numerous other crimes after the killings in March at the Boulder grocery store. A preliminary hearing in the case has been delayed for the mental health evaluation. The next court date is scheduled for October 19th after the competency report is finished. Should Elisa be found to be incompetent, he would be committed to a facility for treatment and the proceedings against him paused. If he is found competent, the case would move forward. JBS, the giant meatpacking company, has been fined nearly $175,000 because a worker at the company's Greeley facility lost his arm after he was caught in a conveyor belt. In February, the worker was entangled in the machine, and according to the Greeley Tribune, the Occupational Health and Safety Administration determined that JBS hadn't put proper guards around the conveyor belt, and employees didn't know to wear a plastic device that ensures smock sleeves don't dangle. The company was fined last year after 6 employees died from COVID-19, and nearly 300 were infected with the virus. Today, there's an air quality alert in the metro area because of multiple pollutants. Hot and dry conditions, along with out-of-state wildfire smoke, will allow both ozone and fine particulate concentrations to reach the unhealthy for sensitive groups category. Otherwise, today we'll see sunny skies and highs in the upper 80s. Tomorrow, sunny and highs in the mid-90s and about the same for Friday. Right now, it's about 55 in Boulder and Fort Collins and 61 in Denver. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The process of redistricting is heading into the final stretch in Colorado. The state's Independent Congressional Redistricting Commission will be holding virtual public hearings throughout the week. These meetings are the last chance members of the public have to give their input directly to members of the redistricting commissions. When the process kicked off several weeks ago, we spoke with Dr. Beth Momskog, Associate Professor of Math at Colorado College and analyst for the Colorado League of Women Voters. And we welcome her back to the program today. Good morning, Dr. Momskog.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me here, Shannon.
Sure. And first, can you give us an overview of how this process has played out since we last spoke?
Sure. So last time we talked about this, we covered the fact that there were two commissions working on drawing the maps, the Congressional Commission, which is tasked with drawing the congressional maps that we have just recently seen released. And then there's a Legislative Commission that has really released preliminary maps, but hasn't released a new plan. So recently, the most exciting thing that's happened is on September 3rd, we got a first staff plan that is using the census data. So having population that's actually equal or as close to equal as possible between districts released by the Congressional Commission. So there's a new plan out there. It has some big changes in it. It was drawn in response to the public comment that the commissions had solicited. So hearings around the state. You can see it on their website. And there's another opportunity now for public comment, and there will be additional maps drawn in response to those comments. But we're getting our first look now at what the districts could really look like with the populations as the census has found them.
And one of the proposed changes that came out of those meetings that were announced on the 3rd of September would create a congressional district in a way that would pit Congressman Joe Neguse against Representative Lauren Boebert. How did that happen?
So this is part of what happened when the commission decided they really wanted to look at having a Southern Colorado district. So the idea there was to keep Latino communities together in the San Luis Valley and Pueblo and throughout Southern Colorado, and also the Native American tribes in the southwest corner of the state. So creating a Southern Colorado district that would bring all of those communities of interest together. When that happened, that took a lot of the Western Slope from the former Western Slope District and moved the I guess you could think of it in two ways. Boulder became part of the district that contained the Northern Western Slope. So that's how that happened. The commissions are not allowed to take into account incumbency. And so they're not allowed to think about where incumbents are and how this will affect them. So it's a makes for a really exciting and surprising set of situations around the state.
But I mean, as you mentioned, like communities of interest, Boulder is pretty different from just culturally, politically from the Western Slope. Are there arguments for keeping them separate?
So the law is clear in that it asks the commission to take into account many priorities. First off, they need to have equal population, they need to be contiguous, so one piece, and they need to be in accord with the Voting Rights Act. Second, and these are all of equal weight, you want to preserve communities of interest. You would like to preserve political boundaries like counties and cities. And you'd like the districts to be as compact as possible. And then after all those priorities, you're looking at trying to maximize competitiveness. So there is a case to be made that perhaps the Western Slope and Boulder represent different communities of interest. However, there's so many overlapping communities of interest that it's possible that putting them together does preserve some of those communities. And that's the really hard task that the commissions are looking at. So I'm not going to weigh in on whether there is where Boulder should be, but there's a lot of different communities that they're trying to balance at once here. And sometimes preserving one community, for example, preserving a community in Southern Colorado, is going to disrupt other communities. And because you need to have equal population, if you take some population out of a district that previously had it, you have to put more in somewhere. And so you can end up with some compromises there.
And aside from what we've just covered, have there been some other surprising outcomes as a result of these hearings?
So people had some very strong feelings about the maps. There were some people who loved the previous round of maps, the preliminary maps. Those were always just a starting point because they weren't drawn with census data. They were drawn with preliminary estimated population data. I think that the creation of the Southern Colorado District kind of happened in response to people's requests in those hearings. And there were some other requests looking at changing the new 8th district. It definitely has a new shape to it now. I think people, similar to the surprise that the second district was moved to include the Northern Western Slope, so putting Boulder and the Western Slope together, people were also surprised by the inclusion of Fort Collins into the Eastern Plains District. Again, balancing population, trying to get competitiveness, there's a lot going on. And so this is, the first maps were just a starting point. Everybody knew they were just a starting point because they were drawn with the without the real census data. But these maps are, in some sense, also a starting point. A lot of people came out to talk about things they didn't like about the preliminary maps, but maybe didn't, if people felt comfortable with those, they didn't speak up. I guess the idea of the next round of hearings is to hear from people about what, you know, is maybe wrong or right about these maps. There's still two more rounds, potentially, where we could see changes to these maps. This is the first staff plan, and the timeline allows for up to two more plans to come out. So if people would like to contribute and, you know, give their feelings on these maps, there are several public hearings coming up in the next few days. I can, on the web, the redistricting.colorado.gov website, that's the official redistricting commission website. They have tons of great information, including a hearing schedule. And there's some hearings coming up, today at 9 a.m. So as soon as you want to talk about it, you're able to.
Dr. Beth Momskog of the Colorado League of Women Voters, thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you.
The Boulder Symphony opens its 2021-22 season this week. For a look at what's in store, KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with its co-founder, Devin Patrick Hughes.
Boulder Symphony will host a concert this Friday at Grace Commons Church in Boulder. Joining me to talk about this week's show is the Boulder Symphony's conductor and co-founder, Devin Patrick Hughes. Devin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for hosting me, Alexis. I'm really excited to be here.
To start, tell me about Friday's show. What should people expect to hear?
So this concert is just strings, and one of the pieces we're playing comes from a 400-year-old piece by Vivaldi called The Four Seasons, which many people will know. It's essentially been recomposed to fit a 21st century audience. So we've added harp and, of course, an electronic harpsichord. And Max Richter, who's the reorchestrator or or DJ, if you will, he's essentially taken the original themes from Vivaldi, and it would normally be just like first violin, second violin, viola, cello. But what he does is he splits the first violin section into like four different sections sometimes. So if you start a melody and then two beats later, you start the melody again, but he does it in a very ambient way, which is quite minimalistic in the style of like Steve Reich or Philip Glass. We just had our rehearsal on Sunday night and we were commenting how it reminded us more of Philip Glass than it actually did Vivaldi. I think it's got very meditative qualities, you know, but all at the same time, you're very clearly being able to tell, okay, this is winter. You know, and I should feel cold, or this is summer, and the sort of scorching heat of the sun is still present. It's quite genius in how he's done it. And the two other pieces on that program, one of them is by a Chickasaw composer named Jared Impichachaha Tate, called Pisachi, and it essentially features dances from the Hopi and the Pueblo culture and nations. Sometimes the rhythms are quite multi-metric, which means dun, da-da-da-dun, da-da-da-dun, da-da-da-dun. And it's chant-like and hymn-like. So Jared Tate happens to be a Chickasaw composer, and through attending powwows or cultural exchanges, and he calls it jamming, with other American Indian cultures and tribes, they kind of have all these great rhythms and melodies that have been kind of passed down over the centuries. And the last piece on the program is a much more kind of standard classical piece, if you will. It was written in 1934 by the English composer Benjamin Britten. He wrote it as a 20-year-old, and he basically recollected themes from the ages of 9 to 12. So it's called Simple Symphony just because he wrote it as a kid, and he wrote it that he intended it to be performed with a youth orchestra or kind of an amateur orchestra. And it's kind of ironic because it's quite a complex piece. It's the movements are like boisterous, beret, playful, pizzicato. You know, he kind of has these fun descriptive terms that go along with it. And it's just a really fun kind of classical symphony, if you will, but really short. It's like 12 minutes long that the strings really get to dig into at the Boulder Symphony.
Your partner founded the Boulder Symphony in 2009. Can you tell me about why you founded it?
So we started this organization essentially because we feel that classical music needs to be everywhere. Symphonic music needs to be everywhere. And one of the things that I found growing up is there were always barriers, you know, between the audience and the stage. And there was this idea that you had to have some kind of really profound education, or, you know, had to learn an instrument from the age of 4 or something to really kind of understand or be able to really get something out of the classical orchestra. And as I learned about music, and as I conducted, and as I played, and as I sort of put concerts together and collaborated with other organizations, we really started the Boulder Symphony under the guise of, okay, let's bring everybody in. You know, we try to make ticket prices affordable. We try to make sure that people understand, you know, what's going on behind the scenes of an orchestra. What were these composers thinking? Like, what kind of things were going through their lives at this time that incentivized them to write this amazing music that speaks to us hundreds of years later? So it's really about just accessing the art form for everyone.
So what happened during COVID? Did you guys stop playing together, or how did you swing that?
Yeah, so, well, obviously for all nonprofits, COVID has been one of the greatest challenges we've ever faced. Essentially, we spent our time keeping our relationships going, kind of reaching out to a lot of our collaborators to see what they need also to get through. We did a special Mother's Day concert, which featured a bunch of our musicians from home recording. And we were luckily able to start doing concerts in March. And what we just tried to obviously adhere to all the state and regional guidelines. So many of our concerts were just strings or percussion or, you know, any instrument that can be masked. And then the last thing that I'm probably most excited about that we've been able to do during the pandemic is we're starting a music school, the Boulder Symphony Music. So this is with also, you know, the very generous contribution of Stephen Thibault, who's helping to make this happen with one of his properties. And it's an office complex that we've transformed into a school, which can host people of any age and any level wanting to learn. It could be an orchestral instrument, but we also have, you know, guitar, and we have some movement practices. We have voice, we have composition and conducting as well. So I feel like the pandemic has just basically kicked us into high gear, and we haven't really slowed down at all.
Devin Patrick Hughes is the conductor and co-founder of Boulder Symphony. Thanks, Devin, for joining us.
Thank you so much, Alexis, for having me.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk about an essential oil that you may want to have in your repertoire of remedies, and that is eucalyptus essential oil. Eucalyptus, there's many varieties, is in the Myrtaceae family. So it's a relative of tea tree oil, which you might have also had the pleasure of inhaling. Yeah, eucalyptus is a tree that grows in many parts of the world, but most famous, Australia. And it's also known as the blue gum tree. So perhaps you sang the little song growing up, Kookaburra sits in the blue gum tree, eating all the gumdrops he can see. That's really about koala bears eating eucalyptus, because that is their sole food. So why do we want to talk about eucalyptus? Well, it's antimicrobial, and that means antibacterial, antifungal, and antiviral. It's also antiseptic and a decongestant and an expectorant, meaning it helps to break up phlegm in the lungs. It's also an herb that helps to reduce fever. In many traditional cultures, eucalyptus is used to treat wounds and infections, and it is so antimicrobial that at one time it was used to cleanse medical tools. So eucalyptus leaves and also the pods have been used in many ailments. It can be made into a tea, but it's not so delicious. But it is really a great bath herb for sore muscles, as a gargle for sore throat. So if you do have eucalyptus oil, I don't suggest you ingest the essential oil, but a couple drops in a glass of warm water could be gargled. It could also be diffused in the sick room. I'm sure you've smelled it in a sauna where it helps to decongest you and helps to open your lungs so you can actually breathe more deeply in the sauna. It's used topically on blisters and boils and burns and herpes and wounds. It's also used in things like chest balms for opening the lungs and also for painful arthritic joints. So as I said, the tea is quite bitter, but it does, when used topically, the essential oil can be a natural insect repellent. I've even seen the pods and leaves stuffed into dogs' and cats' beds to deter fleas, as well as worn as a collar around their neck. In many parts of the world, eucalyptus has been planted to dry up swampland because swampland encourages mosquito breeding. And so planting eucalyptus will dry up the swampland. However, eucalyptus is very inflammatory and can burn quickly. So a bottle of eucalyptus oil, good thing to have. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Alexis Kenyon, and Brigitte Mars for their work on today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine.